Okay, if you're here for my talk, I'm Blake Matheny, then I'm going to get started. I don't bite hard, so you can move up if you want to. The title of my presentation is A System for End-to-End Brokering of Diverse Data Types, and the title is actually a little bit misleading because what I'm going to be presenting today is research that we've done at Purdue University in the Sirius group, if you know what that is, and I'm going to be presenting part of a calculus that we developed for describing high-level events as well as an implementation that we have and things you can do with this implementation. So, like in the introduction, like after I talk about a few of these things, I'm going to talk about how you can apply this system in terms of a next generation intrusion detection system and problems with existing intrusion detection, why this addresses those issues. But the some of the math things that we've developed are applicable in lots of areas, and actually some people that have seen this have already applied it in a couple of different areas. Okay, so about 4 or 5 months ago, I was working on a project, and we needed to get data from one place to another. It's a pretty simple problem. And so we tried to define what a logging mechanism should do. And we defined it as, kind of in managerial terms, as to relay relevant information to an appropriate agent in the amount of time most suitable for that event. And that sounds like, it kind of sounds like crap, but if you think about it, that actually that really is what a logging mechanism should do. It should get information to where you want it to go. But we found that nothing out there actually does that. And in general, they relay data to any agent that understands a certain data format. And that's not right. Like, for instance, syslog. You can use, you know, the libc system calls to, you know, send a message, but that's not very useful because you have 100 other applications that are generating logs in some other format. So, I mean, there's lots of problems with the current way that logging mechanisms work. And so these are some of the reasons that the current thinking behind logging mechanisms in general are a problem. And the first thing there is heterogeneous application layer data formats lead to information loss or, at best, information overload. And the reason that I say that is you have all these different applications generating different types of event. You have your IDS sensors generating things maybe in XML, or you have Tripwire generating things in this proprietary binary format, things like that. And so if you can gather all that stuff, you're screwed because you have too much information now and it's not all in the same format. And if you can't gather that information, you're also screwed because now you're losing information. So kind of you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And the other thing is protocol diversity. All these different applications are using different protocols. Syslog uses, you know, UDP 5.12? 514? Yeah, that sounds right. And, you know, everyone, and they all have, the way that they're packing their bits into their structures are all different. And so even if you can deal with just how the application layer information is being formatted, then you have to deal with the protocol format. And so you have this other layer of problems. Another thing is not all data is needed by every agent. So, for instance, your mail admin, he's not interested in SSH login information, okay? He's interested in, you know, what's going on with mail systems, okay? And so you have all these systems generating all this data, and it's actually really hard to get that data back out, and it's especially hard to get it back out in a way that it can be used in the places where it's needed. And these things make forensics and correlation difficult or impossible, and that's kind of what I was interested in. These problems, I mean, for obvious reasons, make correlation very difficult. It's hard to take all these different events, say, this is actually one event, send it to this place because this person needs it. And forensics, of course, is really difficult because when you're sending your data off somewhere else, now there's the chance that it was intercepted. Okay, so we have all these problems, but if we solve these problems, what does it give us? The first thing, and this has been the focus of recent research that we've done, is scope resolution for events. And when I say scope resolution for events, what I mean is that given, and anybody who's done some system administration or dealt with intrusion detection knows this, if you look at an event in one context, it applies perhaps on a host. But then when you look at that event as part of an aggregate event where you have information about information at several hosts and some other inputs, all of a sudden that information becomes applicable at higher levels. And so that's what I mean by scope resolution. You have all this different information, and when you are able to correlate that, you can see what level this information is useful in and then decide what to do with it. You can do better correlation through reduction. You have this really, you have all of these events going on, okay? And so if you can correlate, if you can say these 50 events mean that this one thing happened and that's what we're interested in, then you don't have to send off 50 independent events, these 50 primitives. You only have to send off one event for someone to look at, and that's really useful. And better intrusion detection in general. And that's because, like I said, if you see something that perhaps on a host this user failed to log in, okay, that's kind of interesting. But what if you see that same user failed to log in across 50 different hosts, okay? That's much more interesting. So, like, if you take into account, like I was talking about, the scope resolution, you can say at this higher level that, okay, seeing it at one host isn't interesting, seeing it span across multiple hosts is interesting. And this... the method that we've come up with actually allows you to detect unknown attacks, because we make this assumption that, and this is barring the stupidity of some system administrators, but we assume that some sysadmins actually know what their system should look like. They have this general idea of, well, you can actually say this. You can say, I know what's running on my network. I have these hosts. I know that sendmail is running here. I know that sendmail can spawn a root shell, but sendmail should not spawn a root shell, okay? You can make those types of assumptions. I mean, certainly you can't know everything that's going on in your network. It's just not easy to model extremely dynamic systems like that. But the calculus that we've developed allows you to model those high-level events, which can tell you when things are going on that you couldn't have anticipated. If people have questions throughout this, just raise your hand and I'll try and answer it. Okay, so what's the solution? We have these problems. We know that if we address these problems, we get some neat things out of it. So what's the solution? It's a system for end-to-end brokering of reverse data types, what we've been working on, or at least we think this is the solution. And we actually have an implementation, which I'll get into a little bit. But we took these different ideas from different places because there are some good ideas in information security. A lot of things are kind of failures, but for instance, like with firewalls, okay, network filters are pretty okay. You say, if traffic is coming from here, it shouldn't be allowed to get to here. Or you say, if traffic is going to here, it's only allowed to go out on this port, things like that. And application filters are good too. Being able to actually say, does this protocol comply with what we, you know, what the RFC says? And if not, don't let it through. Somebody's trying to, you know, operate on a covert channel or something like that. But the combination of those two is better. And like, if anyone here has ever used Raptor, it's this firewall, and it's great because it does both those things. But it's horrible because it's like the worst implementation ever. It's like brain surgery to get it to work. And so there's another problem in that you have these neat things that something can do, but if you can't make it easy enough that people can reasonably configure these things, then it's kind of a lost cause anyway. And another thing is routing. Source routing is useful. If something's coming from here, then we send it to here. And so then we started thinking about information routing, okay? You have all of this information on a network. You have a ton of it. And my friend Aaron calls it searching for Sophie in the data swamp, where Sophie is knowledge, because you have this data swamp, which is just this tremendous amount of data that's being generated on a network. And How do you actually pull knowledge from that? It's a difficult problem, and that's what we're interested in, is routing knowledge where it's useful. So we actually have this implementation. And it works in a pretty simple way. There are these three types of modules, these input modules, these data format modules, and these output modules. So an input module takes input from any source, okay? So maybe you have a sniffer module that pulls stuff off the wire, or another one that accepts something from Snort, or another input module that, you know, is dialing up a PBX and pulling information off of that. Whatever. But what that does is it passes information to the core, okay? And the core is what we're primarily developing. So this information gets passed to a core, but it's still totally useless, okay? It's in its, you know, proprietary application layer format. Input modules are responsible for stripping out some of the protocol information. But I'll give you guys the link for the source code. You can actually say to save some of that stuff, because it's useful if you want to take in an SMTP message, see if it has this type of thing, and then send it off as an SMTP message. You don't want to actually lose any of the protocol information, because once you get to the output piece, you're like, what was this supposed to do? So we can't lose that information. So the input, it saves some of that information, but what it is primarily responsible for doing is putting it in a format so that the data format modules can deal with that. And we did some research and looked at a whole bunch of different security applications, saying, how do they log information? How do they transfer information? What's the format that's used? And we found that in the majority of the cases, it was XML, which everybody loves, or some variation of, so something with structure, or something without structure like syslog, but you can make some. But it's not natural language, though. You can actually, you know, do some types of formatting with it. So those are the two data formats that we're primarily addressing. You can write other data format modules to support these weird formats, but we're actually working with finite state transducers. If people know what those are, they're pretty cool. But basically, they're like these. There are these finite state machines that you give an input, and it will generate some output, but then given that output, it will then generate the input. So it's like this two-way function for it's like a two-way grammar, I guess. Actually, Chomsky had these ideas about these transformational grammars, and he said that basically all language on the planet is sort of the same, and if aliens came here, then they would laugh at us because, you know, we're all pretty much saying the same thing. So he thought you could have a transformational grammar where you would describe your input grammar and it would be able to transform it into this other language, okay? And that's nothing new, but he thought then you could also transform it back. And that was actually proved to be an undecidable problem. And Seth was just talking about, you know, NP complete, NP hard, and undecidability is another part of computer science that if you can prove that, then you know you're wasting your time. So, but we don't think we're wasting our time because we're dealing with a subset of languages. We're only dealing with data formats that are XML-like or syslog-like, where you can sort of describe them with regular expression. And I'll get a bit into that, too. That's actually a really hard problem. Another thing in computer science is if it's hard, say it's undecidable, then you don't have to work on it. So you have this data that gets these data format modules. They transform your input data into this intermediary language, okay? And then when you have this intermediary language, you actually have a model for your data, okay? And the current model that we're working with is a system called M2D2, which once you say it, people are kind of like, you're using M2D2? But it's actually a really strong model for data, for modeling security events. Really the input intermediary language is somewhat arbitrary. It really doesn't matter so much. The only thing that matters is that you have a symbol that maps to some variable that was in the input data so that users know I will have these symbols that I can deal with. And if that's a bit vague, I'll show you a demonstration. So this data gets taken in by the input module. It gets brought into the core. Then the core sends it to the data format module. Data format module passes it back out in this new intermediary language where now you can actually kind of work with this stuff. You can model your data a little bit. You have some structure to it. After you close your eyes and spin around three times, then it gets decided where it's going, and it leaves the output module. And I'll describe that process a little bit more. Okay. So the prototype that we have is actually just input and output, which actually isn't very interesting, because we were making this assumption that every event was atomic or was primitive in some sense, that it you wouldn't have to relate it to other events, which you simply know is not true. And so we started thinking, well, why can't you just say, instead of I'm going to output it, I'm going to take this action, which may be an output. So we started thinking about how we can model events, because that's essentially what you have, okay? I wasn't interested in the security domain. In fact, if somebody asks me what I'm in, I will never say security. I'll always say I'm a systems guy or I'm a math guy or something like that. But never security. So this applies in lots of areas. And actually, the area that I'm interested in is its applications in digital libraries. I mean, you can imagine an input module that crawls the web, formats this stuff to a common language, and then stores it all somewhere for people to search and things like that. That's kind of what I'm looking towards. But you need this way to model interactions between data, okay? And so this was the first thing that we would need to address, is how we could model those interactions. And then the next thing that we would need to address is, it's kind of the same thing. It's the language to model high-level scenarios, which is the scope resolution that I was talking about. Next thing is, data format transformation is hard. And I don't mean hard in the computer science sense. I mean hard in the banging your head against the monitor sense. We've spent lots of hours trying to figure this out, and if people have suggestions or want to talk about it, I'm up for it. But we're working on that. And it's surprising because actually, after it was decided that it was undecidable to do transformations, people kind of stopped doing research in that area. And they shouldn't have, because there's lots of applications like this where just doing transformations for a subset is really desirable. And then complex systems are vulnerable to SAD, System Admin Deficiency Syndrome. And sorry to any sysadmins out there, but basically, a lot of sysadmins that I've worked with are the kids that failed programming 101 three times. And so we kind of have to aim for the lowest common denominator. We need to say that the system can't be so complex, and people can't need so much knowledge of their system that it becomes impossible to model the events they're interested in. So it needs to be simple. Okay. The first thing I'm going to talk about is data types. This has to do with the data transformations, why this is a hard problem, and things we're trying to address. So we basically have, we label these three different data types. You have unstructured data, which is like natural language or free text or things like that, things where you can't apply regular expressions to them. You can't apply, your standard grammar to them. You actually have to take some other things into account. And I'm actually working with a professor in linguistics at Purdue, and we're working on integrating an ontology into this so that we can deal with some of the natural language aspects. But right now, we're not focusing too much on that. But the other two types that we identified were semi-structured data, like HTML or syslog, and structured data, like XML or UML or most programming languages. And like I said before, most security data formats are either semi-structured or structured. I don't know of any, security programs that are, generating a voicemail message and sending it to you. So we're not dealing with that right now. But for like digital libraries, like the ontology piece is like, it's really necessary. And we believe that we can model the second two types of data formats while staying within our requirements of one common language. So we basically want people to be able to say, I have this input format. I want it to map like this in the intermediary language. And that's all that they have to define. And if it's in the intermediary language and needs to go back, it's a part of the definition of how that should be structured. And these are the requirements that we had for transformations. Now, I say that we need a bijection between the original data and the intermediary language. And if you're sort of following this, or you're not or you are a math person, you'll know that a bijection between these two is impossible. There's no way that you can model every possible mapping from your input language to this intermediary language, okay? But that's okay, because, and actually in the sense that we're talking about, there is a bijection. People can say that this is the input data that we will be looking at. This is how I would like it to map to an intermediary language. So in this sense, they're already reducing their data, okay? They're already saying that these are the pieces of data that we're interested in, okay? And that's what they really need. I mean, if I'm someone that's setting up an event correlation system, I need to reduce data. I need to pull out of this data what is it that I'm actually interested in, okay? But you need to maintain structure. When you pull your input format into this intermediary language, you lose any structure. It's a flat mapping. So if you have something with recursive definitions or things like that, formats like XML where things can, you know, be children of children of children, it's really difficult to maintain that structure in a flat mapping. So we need another method to do that. But that is a requirement, because if you take something in an XML and it needs to go right back out in XML, if you've lost all that structure, then you're screwed. So you need to be able to do that. And the transformation must be lossless, but lossless in the sense that if something's coming in as XML, a sysadmin says, these are the pieces of it that I'm interested in, okay? Then it needs to leave with those pieces of information that they're interested in, okay? So you're getting a syslog entry, right? And it's some information about a user login, okay? And you say, I'm interested in the user, the time it happened, and whether or not it succeeded, okay? And so you map these into your intermediary language, okay? And that's what you're interested in mapping to your output language, okay? And so when I say transformations must be lossless, I mean they must be lossless in the sense that if you're interested in these three pieces of data, you have to be able to get those back into the output language. Mappings must be user-definable. I mean, obviously, you know, sysadmins or people using this system need to be able to say, these are the pieces of information that I'm interested in. And the mapping definitions are two-way functions. And I say that in kind of loose terms, because what I really mean is that it's in the transformational sense, in that given an input and you map it into this intermediary, it needs to map, you know, you put this intermediary back into your function and it maps right back out, or to some other output. You know, say you're taking in syslog information. You won't necessarily be putting it back into that format, but you may be putting it back into XML or something like that, but you can't lose any data in that process. Okay. I mean, we identified a lot of the problems, but there are a lot of them. So we've started going piece by piece saying, what problems do we need to solve to make this reality? And the first thing that we started doing was coming up with a calculus for doing event modeling. And, well, if you've looked at, the two pieces that we pulled in were, James Allen has a temporal algebra, which gives you 13 binary algebraic operations that relate events temporally, okay? So what that means is, given two events, you can always say this is how they relate temporally, okay? This event came before this, during this, it overlapped this. And he gives you these 13 operations, and they're actually really powerful. And the paper that we've been working on recently, we proved that, and this is actually really intuitive, but it's hard to prove, that, you know, any two events can be related temporally. And you could say that because every event has some relative temporal information, okay? We don't necessarily need, and this is actually something that is a problem in existing systems, is they make you say that if this happens at this time, and then 5 minutes later this happens, which just doesn't make any sense in most information security applications, okay? A lot of times, you can do this with the calculus we've worked on, but most of the time you need some relative information saying that if this event happens and then you know, perhaps this other event overlaps this event, or, you know, it happens after this event, but you constrain it within this much time. I mean, and Alan in his paper, he actually proves that the 13 operators that he gives you are complete as far as temporal relations. So this is one thing that we looked at because, okay, you can relate these events temporally, and that's great, but unfortunately, there are no, between two events, you can't always say that just because something happened before something else or it happened after something else, you can't say that they're necessarily related. And I mean related in a higher level sense, that saying if they are related, then they're part of some aggregate event. So we looked at McCarthy's situational calculus. And McCarthy's situational calculus gives you the ability to describe situations. You say that you have these fluents, what he calls fluents, and there are these things called propositional fluents, which a propositional fluent, one of its arguments is the domain of all situations, okay? And its range is true or false. So some of these things just evaluate as true or false, like typical predicates, okay? But then he also has these other fluents, these situational fluents. And what these do is, instead of having a range of true or false, they have a range of all the situations, okay? Which is neat, because you can say, in this situation, this event can bring about this other situation, okay? And so you're not limited in saying that if this happens, then this will happen. Because you know that information security, it's just not that static. It's really, really difficult to just, you know, give an antecedent and a consequent, okay? You really have to, yeah.
So when they tried to calculate CIDF, right? Did they actually look at any of that?
CIDF is a lost cause. Yeah, IDMF, which is the intrusion detection, anybody know the acronym game? It's the new version, do you know what it is? Messaging exchange format. It is basically a replacement for CIDF. But none of these things needed to look at this. And so there are these things, CIDF and IDMF and these other descriptional languages, but they're not aiming for this. They're aiming at describing alerts or events, not necessarily situations.
Okay, with CIDF, part of their punch was supposed to be describing situations. They have operators such as this compromised to that by the means of X, Y, Z.
Sure. Well, and there's other languages like Lambda and a few others that recently have been proposed. And the problem with a lot of these languages is that they're far too restrictive. You're looking for the compromise of this machine, okay? It's impossible to give every possible scenario for which that can come about. So it's better in some sense to look above that and say, given these relationships between these events, it is possible for this to happen, rather than it will definitely lead to this. Because lots of these languages, they look at a compromise, okay? Or they look at some event and they say, did these things happen before it? Okay? And that's not adequate, because then you have to say, did it happen in that order? Which is what a lot of those languages are restricted by. And we don't do that. And then you also, these languages, they don't allow you to do these more broad generalizations where you aggregate an event and then say, how does this more aggregate event relate to these other events? Okay, so our calculus is more powerful in that sense. But to answer your question, I don't think that CIDF really did look at this. I think they said, hey, we should be able to do that, and so they put it in there. But if you look at it doesn't really make sense. You need more than just the situational calculus to relate events, because you can't model everything, like I was saying. Okay, apparently I have like 2 minutes left, which is unfortunate because the guy before me got started, ended late, so I'm kind of just going to gloss over these. What's right with current intrusion detections?
We've got 2 hours for the IDS, so if you want to
Oh, all right. Sorry to disappoint the people who are here for that. So what's right with current intrusion detection systems? They gather lots of information. That's good. You need information to decide what's going on your network. Sometimes they actually detect intrusion attempts. That's good, too. Some of them sort of do anomaly detection, but it tends to be, you know, more bother the admin function because they tend to be, I mean, most of them tend to be pretty susceptible to data set poisoning, and there's lots of other problems with them. And a couple of them are open source, and that's good too. And there's some more things. What's wrong with current intrusion detection systems? They gather lots of information. That's right with them, and that's definitely wrong with them, because, for instance, given some event, you know, you say this user logged in, or no, you see this buffer overflow, and this may generate multiple events or multiple alerts. And they're primitive. They don't do all the types of detection that you would like them to do. Okay, lots of them are either fall into one of two categories. They're signature based, in which case they're pretty static. Anybody who's looked at Unicode attacks knows that Unicode and representing attacks in other formats makes doing intrusion detection more difficult when you're dealing with signatures. Also, like Snort, people who have looked at like the processing layer of Snort know that it's problematic. And it's just primitive in general, and I think the system that we're developing, it addresses some of these issues in that you no longer are limited in your scope of view, okay? Like, for instance, if you look at Snort, okay, it sees network traffic, okay? Or you look at Tripwire, it sees, you know, events on a host, okay? This system, it takes all of those, okay? It takes the network level, it takes the host level, okay? And it allows you to say, given information at each of these levels, at this higher level, this is where it's applicable, and send it here because that's where it's needed. They deal with mostly homogeneous sources of information. What I mean by that is they tend to deal with one type of information. Like I was just saying, Snort deals with network traffic. Tripwire deals with host information, whereas the system that we're working on deals with all of those things, and you really need that in order to see what's actually going on in a situation. Anomaly detection isn't usually, and there's been some recent research in by like Stephanie Forrest out at I think University of New Mexico on these artificial immune systems, which are really kind of an anomaly detection system, and they're pretty neat, but they're problematic. And false positives lead to habituation in sysadmins. If you're constantly seeing an alert and nothing's there, eventually you're just going to stop paying attention to it.
Back to anomaly detection. How do you define anomaly?
Well, unfortunately with information security, it's a new field, right? And so there is no science, and so there's very few definitions, barring cryptography. Yeah, and exactly. And so when I say anomaly detection, I'm also encompassing misuse detection, okay? And I'm talking about a model where you're saying that this is different from what I think is the normal mode of operation for this system, okay? This is just in a general sense at all layers, okay? If you have an anomaly detection system on your host, and or if you're looking at like anomalies in user login patterns, right? You're saying that this is the norm for a user's login behavior, and if it deviates from this by this much, then it's an anomaly, okay? And so I'm using this to encompass all of those things, you know, user anomaly, host anomalies, network anomalies, things like that. And like I said, you can do those, but because they're so susceptible to data set poisoning, I tend to not pay too much heed to current anomaly detection. And the knowledge that a sysadmin had isn't taken into account usually. So from a system administration, I know I have these hosts. These hosts run these things. These are the types of things that they are used for. And that information is really important because given that knowledge, you know that these are the types of things that should be typical of this system, okay? And so if you can take that information into account along with, you know, modeling of high-level events and taking in lots of sources of information and correlation and scope resolution, all these different things, you get a really, really good view of what's going on in your network. And there's a lot more that's wrong with intrusion detection systems, which I'm sure the panel will get to. I think I only have like two more slides. And how this system fits in. Like I've been saying, like this system allows you to reduce and correlate events. Now, it doesn't force you to reduce. Lots of times you don't want to do that. Like for forensic evidence, for instance, you don't want to just get rid of information, okay? But you can do that. You can say, given these 15 events, and I'm talking about aggregate events, events that are comprised of several primitive events. Given these aggregate events in some either temporal or causal, having these temporal or causal relations, this happened at this level, so send it to, you know, this detection system, which is good with for dealing with this kind of data, or send it to this person who's the mail admin and they're responsible for dealing with this type of stuff. Send primitive and aggregate events to systems that can use them. And this is, like I said earlier, if you have given some higher level aggregate event, it's not useful in every single system that you have. So send it to a place that can use it or to a person that can use it. Detection of unknown attacks through system modeling. Like I was saying, a sysadmin has some knowledge of their network. And it doesn't necessarily have to be intricate knowledge. But you can say, using this calculus, that these are the types of events that are likely to occur. When this occurs, it is because of these previous actions. Okay, so it allows you to draw consequences from a series of actions. Okay. And so when an event occurs that, for instance, if you see a user log out, but that user wasn't logged in, that's weird. That should never happen. Those are the types of simple things that I'm talking about, though, where you can draw a simple conclusion saying that this happened. There was nothing that could have led up to that, so we should investigate that further. And you can take event information from multiple sources for better detection. So, you know, by taking into account all of these different sources, you generally can get better detection, assuming that you're not getting flooded with information and a bunch of other things our system tries to address. So where do things stand? Okay, so we have a couple things done. I wrote a prototype that just kind of allows us to test things. And all it does right now is like protocol proxy type stuff and a little bit of network filtering. Say if the source is this and the type, the protocol is this, then send it off to here. And this is mostly for just so we can test out some things. Like I said earlier, there's a bunch of things that aren't done. But we've mostly worked out the details for our event logic, and like I said, we have a pretty good model for events. So, like this event logic will just allow you to, you know, specify relations between these events that this system will see, and then make decisions based on those. And what's not done? The transformations aren't done, and a whole lot more. But they're, I think we have about, it'll be 3 to 6. I'm not giving a timeline. Everyone in software engineering knows that's what's going to doom you from the start. But yeah, there's a lot not done. But I've got a lot of time left in school, so I'll be working on it, and I get paid, and that's kind of cool too. Yeah, transformations. We found a solution and we threw it out because it was really kludgy, and that's something that if you're in computer science, I hope you don't do the, well, this works, so let's just use it. Like, do the right thing, you know. I won't get into that. But you know, do the right thing. You know, do it right. But we're looking at finite state transducers because they give us a lot of the functionality that we're interested in. Using the system, there's a lot of opportunities for research. Compiler design, because as you can imagine, describing these events, it really needs to be compiled into, compiler design. Mathematical modeling of attacks, which is something I'm really interested in. Ontological systems and their role in natural language processing and natural language generation. So give it, you know, you have all these primitive events. Now you see this aggregate event. So now you want to generate a voicemail message that will call you and say, in the Apple voice, intrusion detected. There's data mining, obviously, and digital libraries, which is what I'm pretty interested in. So here's the URL for this presentation will be there. There's some other documentation there. Our prototype code's there. There's some mailing lists, stuff like that. It's hosted by Savannah, so you know, none of those nasty SourceForge restrictions. So if there are any questions, I'll take them now. Okay, thanks.